you have a specific dollar in mind to reach before you retire, these target date funds potentially delay your retirement by years because of their gentle equity slope. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 62 of The Daily Churn. Today's episode is a special one. It's going to be the final episode in the Big Churn series that I've been doing. So if you remember, there's been two more before this, one on the Roth IRA conversions and one on ACA health subsidies. So you don't need to have listened to both of those before listening to this. It's going to be a totally different topic, but would definitely recommend checking those out when you have time, because like this episode, they're the kind of episode that have a very high financial impact for a pretty minimal amount of effort. And so today's one is going to be focused on the GlidePath investment strategy. If that sounds totally foreign to you, or if it sounds kind of intimidating, it's actually very simple, and we're going to cover the whole thing today. But the reason I wanted to kind of cover it is because investments have sort of been on my mind recently with the Robinhood transfer bonus, where they're matching 3% on any retirement fund transfers. And based on the Discord and the comments and just generally, you know, the amount of hype it's getting online, even on boggleheads.com, I think a lot of people are doing this bonus. And I think as a result of doing this bonus, a lot of people are taking a look at their retirement portfolio, something that a lot of us kind of just ignore and let sit there. You know, a lot of it gets auto-invested by your employer. And it makes sense why a lot of people don't want to think about it. I mean, it's kind of intimidating. You're not sure what to do with your retirement funds. It can be a lot of money, so you don't want to make a mistake as to where you invest it. You're not sure how to allocate between stocks and bonds. And so oftentimes, it's easier just to go with the approach that your employer recommends, which is just auto-investing into a target retirement date fund or an index fund. I mean, some of us are a little more hands-on, where you maybe have an allocation ratio in mind, like, hey, I want to keep 60% stocks and 40% bonds, and then you rebalance that to keep it within those targets. But I think that's more rare than just having things auto-invest. And if that's you, you know, don't feel bad. I think that's most people. And any of those options really are still better than not saving or not investing at all for your retirement. You know, you could be keeping your retirement savings in a checking account, which I recently found out is what my mom has been doing with some of her retirement funds, like six figures worth of cash she has been keeping in a Bank of America checking account for decades, because she didn't trust the stock market. So yeah, that was an interesting conversation. So you can see why, like a few episodes ago, I got really excited when I finally got my dad to open like a credit card for points, because they both grew up in an era and a country where you couldn't really trust the financial system. So, you know, there's all kinds of people out there in terms of like how comfortable they are investing and what they want to do with their retirement funds. But the general trend is that most people just don't want to have to think about it, and they take the easiest route, which is just let your retirement plan do it for you. It's less work, there's less chance of doing something wrong, and again, it's a lot of money at stake, so you don't want to feel like, hey, am I making a mistake? So what that ends up meaning, though, is that most people end up with a suboptimal retirement portfolio. They end up with portfolios that basically mean it will take you longer to reach your retirement goal. Portfolios that give you less money during retirement, and portfolios that leave you with less money to pass on to your kids. That's what we're talking about today. And usually, I tend to caution against over-optimizing things, because optimization takes time. You know, go out there, live your life. You don't need to optimize everything. But if there's one thing to spend a little bit of time optimizing, it's this kind of stuff. It's the stuff in the Big Churn series, because small tweaks to your retirement portfolio is going to yield bigger results than probably all of your churning combined. So small amount of effort, big results. So today, I'm going to dive pretty deep into the GlidePath investment strategy because it's a very simple technique that anyone can do to optimize for retirement. And you don't need to be an experienced or an active stock trader. Like, the point of this strategy is the opposite. It's like, what is the least amount of trading that I can do for the most benefit? And, you know, if you remember from the Optimizer's Curse article I wrote around the holidays, the Pareto principle, where like you put in 20% of the work for 80% of the results. This is the thing, you know, this is how can I put 20% of the investment effort in that will yield a retirement strategy that gives me 80% of the optimization? And that at its core is why I was so excited when I stumbled across the GlidePath strategy. You know, it's so simple, it's so easy. And if you've bought or sold stock before, you can do this. There's no like options or calls or puts or any of that. If you can tackle a brokerage bonus, you can do this. Like the target retirement date fund investments that your retirement plan makes for you, those are attractive to people because they're so easy. You don't have to think about them. This is really not that much harder than that. All it takes is logging into your brokerage website once a month or even just once a year and making a couple of trades. Like, that is it. So we're going to cover why these target retirement date funds are costing you money unless you're a very specific kind of retiree. Unless you're that specific kind of retiree, these target retirement date funds are delaying your retirement and costing you money during retirement. And more importantly, they're making it riskier that you could go bankrupt during retirement. So we'll also go through why fixed stock allocations are also inferior to using a GlidePath. Fixed stock being like, hey, I'm going to keep it at 60% stocks, 40% bonds, and just keep it there the whole time. We will not be going into why hoarding your cash in a checking account is a bad idea. If that's you, it's probably because of some financial trauma you experienced when you were young, like my mom. Which at that point, a therapist, I think, is better equipped to tackle that than this podcast. But outside of that scenario, this is pretty applicable to everyone, whether you're saving for retirement or you're already retired, or if you're planning to retire early, you're trying to do the FIRE thing, the financial independence retire early thing that my wife and I are doing, or you just plan to retire normally at 65. It's particularly relevant if you're about to retire soon or you just recently retired. So we'll cover all of those scenarios as well as how to actually implement this GlidePath. Like, logistically, what do you need to do? And then I'll also run through how we've implemented it and I think share a spreadsheet too to kind of get you started. So yeah, going to be a pretty packed episode today, but I do want to just say this one thing, which is that I'm not a financial advisor, so definitely please do decide for yourself if this is right for you, because at the end of the day, we all have different retirement goals. I hope that by the end of this episode, you have the tools and the knowledge to then go forward and do more research and, yeah, you know, kind of just take a bit more control of your retirement. Before we get into it, just a reminder that we have a free newsletter that you can join if you want to get notified when one of these episodes comes out and have the show notes sent straight to your inbox. There's also a private Discord community. One of the questions that's come up recently about the Discord community, someone left a comment saying, hey, is it active? Like, how active is it really? All I'm going to say is that people have left the Discord because there was too much info. It was too much stuff happening in there. And that is not marketing. That's literally the reason they entered when they unsubscribed from the Discord. So to alleviate that, I actually compile monthly Discord recaps that summarize what's been happening over the last month in the Discord. And that's a great place to start if you're new to this podcast or you're new to churning or you're new to Discord. So definitely check that out if you haven't yet. You can find all of this at thedailychurnpodcast.com. But otherwise, let's get back into GlidePaths. I thought I'd start with just the basics. Like, what even is a GlidePath? And so a GlidePath is just a way of describing your equity allocation as you age, or put more simply, how much stocks and bonds you hold as you age, like what percentage in stocks and what percentage in bonds. So why is it called a glide path? What if you visualize that ratio, the allocation, on a graph? It's a line. You know, age is the horizontal axis, and then the equity, your equity allocation, like how much stocks you hold, is the vertical, the y-axis. And if you have just like a flat horizontal line, all that means would be you hold the same percentage of equities your whole life. You know, if that line was right in the middle of the graph and it goes the whole way through, that means you're holding 50% equities from, you know, age 20 all the way till you die. However, if you have a glide path, what that means is that it continuously slopes or glides down, or it continuously slopes or glides up. So if it's gliding down, it means that the older you get, the less equity you hold and the more bonds you're holding. If it's gliding upwards, that means the older you get, the more equities you're holding and the less bonds you're holding. And it doesn't have to be a straight line. It could be like a V shape, you know, where you have more equities when you're younger and it's coming down to less equities until you like hit the middle where you're retiring. And then it slopes back up after you retire. So you start accumulating more equities after you retire. So there's a lot of different ways you can structure a glide path. And I'll put a graph on the website in the show notes if you're having trouble visualizing it just from me speaking it. But the basic idea is just simply how much stocks do you own as you age? Now, the idea of a glide path is not a new concept. It's been around. The more traditional approach is implemented inside every retirement plan in the form of target date retirement funds. So Vanguard, Fidelity, Morgan Stanley, everyone offers these target date funds, so TDFs for short. And all a TDF is a glide path. It's a really simple declining equity glide path. The goal is it just adjusts your allocation of stocks and bonds based on your age, and it does it for you, so you don't have to go in there and do it. And the most common kinds usually start you around 90%, like Vanguard, for example. They'll start you at 90% equity. So you'd hold 90% equities, 10% bonds when you're young, let's say when you're 25. And that ratio will decline as you age up until age 65, which is what they assume to be your retirement age. And at 65, you'll be holding 50% equities, 50% bonds. And then it keeps declining more. So after retirement, it declines to about 30% equities when you're 72, and it keeps you at 30% until you die. So that's the Vanguard standard equity allocation ratio that they've implemented in their TDFs, and pretty much every other brokerage company follows that same kind of a slope. Why do they do that? Why do they have a declining glide path? Well, the general theory is that when you're young, you can handle more volatility, more stocks. You're less risk adverse when you're 25 than when you're 65. When you're 25, you can better recover from setbacks. So they allocate you with more stocks. Versus when you're old, you're less able to recover because you want to retire at 65. So we increase the stable assets like bonds so that there's less volatility as you get old. So, I mean, as you can tell, this is designed for a very traditional kind of retirement, a traditional age 65 retirement. Someone who has started putting money into their retirement account, ideally at age 20, so that you have 45 years of contributions. And their models assume that you're comfortable with full capital depletion in 30 years, as in after 30 years of retiring, so you're age 95, you'll run out of money, which is okay because you'll be dead by 95. That's why they have that built in. So, of course, you may have already sensed what some of the issues with these target retirement date funds may be. Like, what if you didn't start contributing until later in life? What if 65 is only 10 years away for you? What if you want to retire early? What if you want to retire 5, 10, 20, 30 years earlier than 65? Or what if you want to have money to leave your kids? Like, you don't want full capital depletion by age 95. What if you plan to live past 100? The target date fund is not going to work for you, and in fact is suboptimal on all of those fronts, and even for traditional retirees. And so I'm going to break this episode up into two parts. So the first part is going to be post-retirement glide paths, how to optimally allocate your portfolio after retirement, because it's useful to understand that even if you're years or decades away from retirement, even if you don't plan on retiring early, or even if you're already retired, it's going to be really helpful to have that foundation of knowledge, which then you can apply to other glide paths like the pre-retirement glide path. And so we'll also dive into how to optimally allocate your portfolio pre-retirement so that you can either retire sooner or retire with more. So two parts to it, but let's start first with the post-retirement glide path. With post-retirement glide paths, it's kind of just a different way of thinking about retirement based on newer models that have been developed since the target date funds were created back in the 90s. So newer analysis, newer research. And a lot of what I'm basing today's topic on is the analysis done by Big Earn over at Early Retirement Now. He's a pretty big name in the FIRE, the early retirement community, but it's applicable even for regular non-FIRE retirees. Like, this analysis applies to anyone really who plans to retire at some point, which hopefully is most of you listening. But the background real quick on Big Earn is that he's one of the most financially conservative voices in the FIRE community. And I mention that because I want to be clear that this isn't some like YOLO high-risk crypto strategy that we're discussing. It's literally the opposite. Like, Big Earn believes the 4% safe withdrawal rate, which is the amount of money you can withdraw each year during retirement without going bankrupt. He believes that 4% rate that many FIRE bloggers and influencers talk about, that CNBC and mainstream news also refer to the 4%, he believes that rate is too high. He crunched the numbers and he figured out that it's too high if you want to make sure you don't actually go bankrupt. So his background is that he is a PhD economist. He's worked at the Fed, the Federal Reserve. He's taught at universities. He's worked in asset management. He's currently FIRED. His data crunching and Excel MATLAB skills are pretty next level, which is why we're using his analysis today. Like, if you think you're a good like spreadsheeter, or you're good at charts or statistical analysis, you probably haven't met a PhD economist. I mean, we're all ants compared to those data whales, you know? And so I will be linking to all of his glide path articles in the show notes because they are so in-depth and so good. If you want to read through them, which I recommend you do, brew yourself a big pot of coffee and put on some relaxing piano playlist on Spotify, because these are basically white papers, you know, research papers. And they are very in-depth, but hopefully after today, you should have a bit of a head start in being able to digest and really process a lot of that information. And going back to the financial modeling side of it, he pulls in data dating back from 1871, monthly financial data going back 150 years, and he calculates using that data what a 60-year retirement would have looked like for every cohort, every monthly cohort over the last 150 years. What that means is he's basically crunched and simulated what would have happened if you were someone who retired in January of 1871? What happens if you retired in February of 1871, March of 1871 for 60 years? And he does that for every single monthly group from 1871 until, I think, 2017 was when these articles came out. So like 150 years. It's over 1,700 cohorts, 1,700 groups of retirees. And using that data, he's calculated the effect of different stock and bond allocations ranging from 0% to 100%. And more importantly, what we care about is he's calculated the effect of 24 different glide path variations. So 24 different glide path slopes that could represent how you would adjust your stock and bond allocations as you age. The sheer scope of what he has modeled is pretty mind-boggling to me. And honestly, I'm just very grateful that someone with the knowledge and the tools to be able to do that has done that and then also shared it. And my goal today is to sort of just summarize and interpret that data a little bit and make it more applicable for the folks listening to this show, because a lot of his analysis is framed in the context of a safe withdrawal rate, which is very important for people who are trying to FIRE, you know, retire early, because you want to know what is the fixed percentage of my portfolio that I can take out each year without going bankrupt. Like, am I able to withdraw $40,000 every year adjusted for inflation for the next 60 years? Like, that's a very fiery kind of way of looking at retirement. So we're going to frame it a little differently that's maybe more universally applicable to everyone, which is that, like, what is the allocation strategy, the best allocation strategy that will offer the highest portfolio performance over 60 years? Like, what will leave you with the most money when you die? And probably even more important is what has the least chance of going bankrupt, given that you need to withdraw from that portfolio every year during your retirement for such a long time frame. And, you know, even if you don't plan on being retired for 60 years, if it works for a 60-year retirement, it will work for a shorter retirement too. Like, 60 is the higher bar, the gold standard here. So that's kind of the backdrop for how these new glide paths came about. And the quick and dirty TLDR is that these are a better approach than the glide paths that you'd find in the traditional target date funds. Because in the target date funds, the glide paths for post-retirement, they slope downwards. So you hold less and less equities as you get older. The better approach based on this newer analysis is kind of counterintuitive. It's to do the opposite of that, to glide upwards. So you retire with roughly like a 60% equity allocation, but as you age, it glides up all the way to 100% equities in your later years. That's almost exactly the opposite of what the target date fund has you do. Why is that? Why are we doing the opposite? The lower equity allocation when you start at 60% equities, you have that because you want the insurance, basically, against sequence of returns risk. If you've never heard of that term before, that's okay too. It's kind of a FIRE community type term. But what sequence of returns risk is that the number one reason retirees run out of money when they retire is due to bad returns, bad stock market returns during the first few years of retirement. So imagine you retire at the peak of the market and you think you're all set with your $1 million retirement portfolio. The stock market crashes the very next day or the next year. And if you held 100% equities, your retirement portfolio would be down 20, 30, 40%. And during that time, because you're 100% equities, you still have to support yourself during retirement. So what are you doing? You're selling your stocks to live, but you're selling those stocks at their rock bottom during that recession. And that is the absolute worst time to sell any stock, is at their rock bottom, especially when your portfolio is already depleted so much because of that recession. Like, you may never recover from that, and your portfolio might end up hitting zero before you die. And so having a mix of equities and bonds right at retirement, that's insurance against a market crash that happens early on in your retirement. Because if a market crash happened and you are holding bonds, you can withdraw money from bonds in that first 5 to 10 years. And that protects you against having to sell those equities at rock bottom. It protects you against the biggest point of failure in retirement. And that's what's known as the sequence of returns risk, or SORR. It's basically just the risk that the sequence in which the market is performing well or performing badly just happens to be exactly the wrong sequence, the sequence that's not in your favor. And that's sheer luck, because no one can truly predict the stock market cycles. So that's why both the Target Date Fund GlidePath as well as Big Earn's GlidePaths all start you with a mix of equities and bonds on your retirement date versus having you at 100% equities right when you retire. And that's where the similarities end, because the TDF GlidePath continues gliding down with less and less equities, whereas our GlidePath will now glide upwards with more and more equities after retirement. In fact, it keeps gliding up all the way to eventually holding 100% in equities, 0% in bonds during your retirement. And the reason it glides upwards is because that is how you make it through 60 plus years of retirement. That is how you will die with more money than when you retired. That is how you will have money to leave your kids, because nothing has more reliably and consistently delivered the kinds of returns on your money as the US stock market. The S&P 500 has returned on average 10% every year, or 7% if you adjust for inflation, for the past 100 years. So how do you best capture that kind of insane performance? How do you maximize that? You maximize it by holding 100% equities eventually, because it's a rising glide path. And so what that does is, you know, starting at 60%, rising all the way to 100%, that gives you the best of both worlds. It hedges against the sequence of returns risk, which is the biggest risk factor early on in retirement, and it provides long-term sustainability in later years. You, at this point, might also be wondering, why is it a 60% to 100%? You know, what about starting at 40% to 100%, or starting at 20%, but then only going to 80%? Like, what is the most optimal version of this rising post-retirement glide path? And lucky for you and me and all of us, this is all being calculated. He's calculated all of these glide path permutations. And it's a little too much for me to like recap all of those findings here. I definitely recommend just reading the full article. It should not take you more than like an hour. But in summary, the 60% to 100% one is the one that consistently returns the best results when applied to 150 years of historical market data. So you start retirement at 60%, glide all the way up to 100%, and that is better than any other fixed stock allocation where you're keeping that allocation static. And it's also better than any other glide variation, you know, 40 to 100 or 60 or 80 to 100. So based on that historical data, 60% seems to be the ideal balance of insuring against sequence of return risk while still holding enough equities for long-term growth. And eventually you end up at 100%, because 100% yields the best long-term growth once you're no longer at risk of that sequence of returns risk, which is only in the first 5 or 10 years of retirement. So once you're past that risky early phase, you want to let your equities soar. There are a couple other little things you can tweak as well to optimize even more. There are things like you can adjust the exact slope so that it glides up maybe a little quicker or a little slower, because if it takes too long to glide up, then you have less equity exposure for longer, which can be suboptimal. Too fast isn't good either, because then you have equity exposure too soon, which could also be problematic. And so the optimal seems to be around a 0.3 to 0.4% positive slope, meaning it goes up by 0.3 to 0.4% every month until it hits 100%. And what that essentially results in is that it takes about 10 years to glide up from 60% to 100%, which again makes sense, because the sequence of returns risk is only really applicable for the first 5 or 10 years. You can also decide to do it actively or passively. Like, you can say, I'm going to reallocate every month by 0.3%, which is what we do because that's easy. But you could also reallocate only when the market conditions are favorable. So I won't go into that too much, because at the end of the day, based on the analysis he did, the difference is so minimal that you don't really need to worry about it. So you should just do whatever is easiest. Like, just the mere fact that you're following the glide path strategy at all is going to do more for your retirement than any of these little tweaks. the big picture here is that compared to the Vanguard or any other brokerage's target retirement date funds that bring your equity allocation down to 30% because it glides down and you hold it at 30% till you die, the upward sloping glide path wins every time. Gliding upwards is more optimal than gliding downwards during your retirement. And compare it to a fixed allocation where you don't glide at all, you just keep your equities at 60% during retirement or 70% or 50%, the gliding upwards approach is going to return a 5 to 7% improvement on how much you can withdraw each month. Which, as a percentage, may not sound like a lot, but if you plan to withdraw $100,000 each year during retirement, that's an extra $5,000 to $7,000 each year you can take out forever. Like, that adds up to a pretty massive number once you add up all of those years. Like, where else can you get that kind of gain for almost no effort, just once a month rebalancing? I mean, I think the closest thing that's come to this is Robinhood matching you 3% on retirement asset transfers for free. Like, that's probably the lowest hanging fruit followed by this. And I think that bonus, FYI, goes through April 30th. So if you're listening to this podcast in April, you still have probably like a week or so to do it. As long as you initiate before April 30th, you can get in on that transfer bonus. But I digress. Back to the glide path. You know, if all of this stuff that we've been talking about so far with the glide path sounds pretty awesome, that's only half of it. There's more, because that was just the post-retirement side. Now that you understand why glide paths make sense in post-retirement, we can talk about implementing a more optimal glide path pre-retirement, which ultimately will help you retire earlier and with more money. With pre-retirement, it's kind of like the mirror side of post-retirement. So what you're hedging against is sort of like the opposite of sequence of returns risk. So sequence of returns risk in post-retirement is when the market tanks right after you retire and you end up withdrawing equities during that market tank, which is bad because it really hampers the recovery of your portfolio. But on the pre-retirement side, when you're contributing, you're accumulating, you're investing in the market, investing during a recession boosts your portfolio once it cycles back to a growth, an expansion period again. It's kind of the two sides of the same coin. Like, recessions are bad for new retirees, but they're great for investors that are still working and able to contribute into the market. And I'm going to assume probably that most listeners listening to the show are pre-retirement. I think there are some FIRE folks that follow it. So if that's you, welcome. Hopefully your FIRE journey is going well and you may have already heard of all of this early retirement now glide path stuff. But for everyone else, I think the majority of people who are pre-retirement, I want to kind of start with the most common pre-retirement investment strategy, which, as we discussed earlier, is that you or your employer is investing into a target date fund for you, because that is the default option for most employer retirement plans. And I want to just quickly say that that is a good thing. Like, studies have found that auto-enrolling boosts participation in retirement plans. So the same reason why you haven't researched what the better strategies are out there is the same reason why you're auto-enrolled in that retirement plan that's doing a target date fund, which is just sheer laziness. You know, people are too lazy to opt out of auto-enrolling in their employer-sponsored 401k. And so they end up investing in their retirement. And that's a great thing versus not investing in your retirement. So, you know, at the end of the day, right, like, these target date funds, they're still better than keeping your cash under your mattress. So they at least deserve credit for that. But, and there's a big but here, target date funds are suboptimal for most people. And we've covered why they're suboptimal in post-retirement. They glide the wrong way, but they're also not great pre-retirement either. And the analogy I kind of like is the speed limit analogy, you know, speed limits on highways. It's a pretty arbitrary limit that everyone has to follow. Like, it's the same limit that we all have to follow on the freeway. But should your grandma's Toyota Camry from 1990 really be going 65 on the freeway versus a self-driving Tesla going 85? I would say that Tesla is probably less likely to crash going 85 than your grandma's Camry going 65. But it's way too complicated to give everyone a custom limit based on their age, their car, their driving ability. It's easier to set one speed limit because having a limit is still better than not having a speed limit. Less people are ultimately gonna die thanks to that speed limit, but it is suboptimal for most people, except for that select few where 65 miles per hour really was the highest speed they should be going given the car they have and their age and their driving ability. And target date funds are designed the same kind of way, where there's just one fund for everyone. And they're built for a very specific kind of retiree with a very specific retirement age who has a very specific risk profile and income and contribution profile, which we're going to dig into a little more. But these target date funds, you know, they start you off at 90% equities when you're young, when you're far away from retirement. And then they glide you down to roughly 67% equities when you're 10 years away from retirement, which can be fine if you have a massive nest egg built up already by then, you know, that you've been adding to it over the last 30 years, because that's how long they expect you to be contributing for 40 to 45 years. And that final 10 years, you don't really need to grow it that much, right? You're just kind of topping it off a little bit with 10% of your income every year for that last 10 years before you retire. That is the more traditional retiree that these funds are built upon. They're kind of built upon this idea of a retiree from essentially the 1950s, because these funds came about in the 90s. So who's retiring in the 90s? It's people who grew up in the 50s. It's the person who like worked at the auto plant all of their lives. They bought a house in their 20s. You know, they raised 2.5 kids on a single income, and they contributed 10 to 15% of their income every year towards their retirement plan since they were 20. You know, and they eventually retire from that same car factory plant job at age 65. And that's what these funds are geared towards. And that's not how most people live or retire anymore. Maybe you're in your 50s now and you're just thinking about retirement and going, oh crap, I have nothing saved. Or you're in your 20s and 30s and you're like, there's no way I can keep doing this job for another 30 years. You know, maybe you want to retire in just 10 years and you want to speed run it from having $0 saved to being able to retire, and you're down to trim like all of your expenses, all of the fat, and you're down to save 50% of your income every year towards retirement during those 10 years instead of just 10%. I think those scenarios now are more common than the white picket fence General Motors retiree. And these target date funds, they weren't built for these new scenarios. The target date fund, again, is for a person who's planned all of their life to retire at a very specific age. It's the person who says, I will retire at 65, not a year or two earlier or later. It's for a person who is highly risk adverse and extremely inflexible in their retirement date. And so to achieve that, the target date funds sacrifice performance to make sure you can retire on your retirement date, no matter what. It's essentially a very costly insurance against market conditions that may otherwise cause you to delay your retirement. So if you have any flexibility in your retirement date, or if you're someone who's able to contribute a high amount into your retirement plan, like you're able to contribute 50% into your retirement plan instead of just 10%, if that's you, chances are you could be doing a lot better than a target date fund by implementing your own custom glide path. If you recall from the post-retirement glide path that ends at 100% equities, you can kind of guess where the pre-retirement glide path should start, because it's sort of a mirror copy. The pre-retirement glide path, the more optimal version of a pre-retirement glide path, would have your equity start at 100%. So 100% equities to start with in pre-retirement. And if you're more risk adverse, you would start gliding that down to 60% 5 years before retirement. So you keep it at 100% all the way through until 5 years before retirement, and only then start gliding down from 100% to 60% until your retirement date. So basically, for the last 5 years before retirement, you're reducing your equity allocation by 8% each year from 100% down to 60%. Compared to the Vanguard target date fund, which starts you at 90%, that is the most equities they will ever have you hold. So 90%, even when you're, let's say, 20 years old, they want you holding 90%. And that starts gliding down, so reducing stocks, and you start reducing 25 years before retirement, not 5 years before retirement, 25. So at age 40, you'll start reducing down from 90%. And by the time you're 10 years out from retirement, you're now only holding 67% in stocks, and that will keep declining. So for the last 10 years, you'll glide down from 67 all the way down to only holding 50% in stocks. So why is this bad? It's bad in the same way that the post-retirement glide path in the target date funds is bad, in that it is bad because you end up missing out on huge chunks of market return. If you want to go from $0 to FIRE, to early retirement, in just 10 years, you don't have the luxury of such a gentle equity allocation, you know? That's designed for the traditional retiree who has built up a large nest egg over 45 years. That retiree is someone who probably has way more than they need for retirement. They're the kind that doesn't care about optimizing because they don't need to. They're the kind that has a set retirement date. Like, the retirement date is more important than the portfolio value to them. That is the demographic that Vanguard caters to, and all the other brokerages cater to with their target date funds. So if you have a specific dollar in mind to reach before you retire, these target date funds potentially delay your retirement by years because of their gentle equity slope. If you have a specific retirement date in mind, target date funds will make sure you reach that retirement date, but you will reach it with less money than you would have if you implemented your own glide path. With the glide paths we're discussing today that start you at 100% equities in pre-retirement, that basically means you capture more of the market, the full effect of the market, for longer. And in fact, depending on your life situation and your level of flexibility, it can even make sense to not glide down at all pre-retirement. So holding 100% equity all the way through to your retirement date can also be a more optimal strategy, because if you have flexibility and a high contribution rate, if the market tanks right when you're planning on retiring, you would just delay for a few years. And during those few years, guess what's happening? You're contributing into a down market, which is one of the best things you can do for your retirement portfolio. But at the end of the day, I think that level of flexibility is hard for a lot of people. Like, you probably at least want a year or two where you're sort of winding down and making some plans for your retirement. And so most of us, I think, would want some amount of gliding down. Like, if you say, hey, I plan to retire in 5 years, you spend those final 5 years gliding down from 100% down to 60%. And that means basically that as you approach your 5-year planned retirement date, you hold less and less equities, which means less market exposure, which means less volatility, which means less risk that you'll have to delay your retirement. The added benefit of gliding down to 60% like that is that you're at the perfect starting point then for the post-retirement glide path, because the post-retirement glide path goes up from 60 to 100% over about 10 years post-retirement. Here's the sort of point in the episode where I want to add that if you've listened to all of this and you're feeling pretty skeptical, because 100% equities at any time, anywhere in the glide path sounds too risky, I get it. You know, it's a pretty counterintuitive slash opposite approach to retirement investing than what all of us are used to. Like, I know when I heard about this and read about this, I felt the same kind of way. So don't take my word for it. Like, I definitely recommend you do the research, starting with the Big Earn articles, because that's where the stuff is primarily coming from. And, you know, Early Retirement Now, that stuff, he's known as the Grinch of FIRE, as someone who regularly argues against most FIRE influencers for being too optimistic in their projections. So this isn't some crazy risk-taking approach towards retirement. And I think that's why it feels counterintuitive, because equities feel risky. And so saying 100% equities sounds like it's a risk-based approach, but it's the opposite. It's actually a more conservative approach if you want to maintain and fund your retirement without going bankrupt. And Big Earn, he endorses 100% allocation, equity allocation, before retirement, because you can afford high equity volatility before you're retired. Your hedge, your diversification against that 100% in equities is your income, your ability to keep pumping money into the market during a recession. That is the winning strategy. That's better than holding bonds. Nothing will boost your portfolio as quickly as investing during a recession. The only thing better than investing during a recession is investing during multiple recessions. So, how crazy is it that if you're still young and you have a long investment horizon ahead of you, that these target date funds are having you hold bonds? It makes no sense for a 25-year-old to hold any amount of bonds for their retirement, because you still have like 5 or 6 recessions and expansions ahead of you. If you're 25, for your first $10,000 that you save towards retirement, putting it into a target date fund will put 1,000 of that into a bond ETF. Assuming you're working and you have an emergency fund set aside to cover your expenses between jobs, diversifying $1,000 into bonds at that age and then adding more and more bonds 25 years before you plan to retire is truly nonsensical. Instead, put that full $10,000 into stocks and let it stay there and grow at 7%, which is the average market return over the last 100 years, and that's adjusted for inflation. Let it grow at 7% every year for decades instead. So, to quickly recap everything we've discussed so far, hopefully at this point you kind of understand why a rising glide path post-retirement from 60 to 100% equities is better, and why a glide path that starts at 100% equities pre-retirement and has a shorter downslope that doesn't even kick in until you're 5 years before retirement, and when it does, it goes from 100% down to 60%, why that is more optimal than a target date fund that literally does the opposite thing it should be doing post-retirement. You know, it glides the wrong way, and pre-retirement, their glide slope is way too conservative. I'll also link to another article in the show notes from Early Retirement Now called Why Target Date Funds Suck. I don't think that's how he titled it, but that's basically the point he was trying to communicate. And that's a great article to read because he brings up some other issues with these target date funds as well that we're not going to cover here today. But if you've been following along okay, and you know, you're like even mildly interested or convinced that this could be a better strategy, and you're like, okay, so how do I go about actually doing this? You know, I'm interested. How do I implement it? The good news is that the hard part, the mental part, is done. You know, like, the next steps are very easy, and that's why I love this strategy, because the first step is you just need to go and figure out how much control you even have over your retirement assets. So post-retirement, you know, you've retired already, that's pretty easy because you do have full control. Like, even if your employer 401k that you still have, they don't let you choose your funds other than target date funds, that's okay post-retirement because you can just roll it over to another brokerage like Fidelity, where you have full control. You can pick any stock or any index fund you want, and you can invest those yourself. Pre-retirement, it can be messier because some employers don't offer the ability for you to pick your own stock. Like, some will give you a self-directed option that you can enroll in. And if they give you that option, you should definitely do that. But some don't, and you're stuck with whatever options are presented in the plan. And sometimes the only options you have are target date funds. So if that's you and you're stuck with just, you know, these target date fund options, you can still hack it a little bit where you pick a target date fund that better matches the glide paths we discussed today. So if, let's say, you plan to retire in 2025, instead of picking the 2025 retirement target date fund, you can instead pick the 2035 or the 2040. You'd still retire at 2025, but you pick a fund that's 10, 15 years later, because that way you end up earlier in their glide path. So you're kind of shifting yourself manually to the higher equity allocation part of the glide path. And that's sort of one way of doing it, so that you have more equity exposure instead of being overexposed to bonds that don't really earn anything. But assuming you do have some level of control over what you invest in and you have access to just regular index funds, then just make yourself a little Google Sheet, which, you know, if you're a churner, you probably have a million Google Sheets. But I'll share my equity allocation glide path Google Sheet in the show notes as well if you just want a quick starting point. But just keep in mind, like, this is a very simple spreadsheet that you can make in like 2 minutes. It's just a table of months. Like, each row is just a month, and it just keeps going every year from now until your retirement date. And then it keeps going past your retirement date by another 10 or 15 years. And that's it. That's your glide path table in a Google Sheet, because for each month in the column next to it will just be your equity and your stable assets allocation. And, you know, that's going to change by a little percent every single month. And so each month you can just pull up the sheet and follow what it tells you. And so for ours, you know, I think it says May 1st, we're supposed to have 72% in equities, 28% in stable. On June 1st, we're supposed to have 72.3% in equities, 27.7% in stable. And it just keeps going up in equities and down in stable by 0.3% each month, because that is the slope we picked. And yeah, each month we get 0.3 closer to holding 100% equities until 2032. That's when we finally reach 100% equities. And we retired in 2021, so it's about 11 years for the glide path to complete. But basically, once you have that spreadsheet, then you just want to be logged into your brokerage and just make a couple really simple trades. So for equities, we prefer to hold VT. So V is in Vanguard, T is in television. That's the Total World Stocks Index Fund that Vanguard has created. So it holds a market cap weighted ratio of stocks across the entire world, so that you don't have to rebalance between international stocks versus US stocks. But you could also hold like VTI. So that's the one that's only US stocks. And then you could also do a combination of VTI and VXUS. VXUS is the total international stocks. So you could do a combo of that. But if you do a combo of that, that's basically what VT is. But VT has a slightly higher expense ratio, I think. But don't worry, I'll be listing all of these symbols in the show notes, so you don't have to be like jotting these down and getting confused with the acronyms. But that's what we do with our equity side, you know, when we reallocate each month. The stable asset side, I think the savvy ones listening might be like, I noticed you said stable assets. You didn't say bonds. And yeah, that'd be a good catch, because yeah, we balance between equities, stocks, and stable assets, not just bonds. That's sort of our little variation to the glide path strategy that Biggeren writes about, that holds a bond ETF. Because instead of holding a pure bond ETF like BND, would be Vanguard's Total US Bond Market ETF, or BNDW, if you want total world bonds, so not just the US. We actually hold a combination of four different assets. We hold bond ETFs. BNDW is what we choose because it's diversified against all of the world bonds. But we also hold I-bonds, so treasury bonds, as well as cash and gold. So for us, it's a bucket of stable assets that we reallocate against the bucket of equities. And why do we do this? So Bigger, and he wrote his GlidePath articles back in 2017, and they are still as relevant today as they have been for the last 150 years. But with the high interest rate environment that we're in right now, I-bonds and cash are viable alternatives. Like, I-bonds were at almost 7% return a couple years ago. I think they've since dropped to around 3%, so we'll be selling those off next year. But like, cash now, it's super easy to earn 5.5%. Like, you can join Wealthfront using a referral and they'll give you 5.5% on any money you save with them. So it's really easy now to get that high of a return on cash. And so both treasury bonds and cash have been outperforming bond ETFs. So they can be substituted for bond ETFs because the purpose of holding bonds in the first place was to act as a stabilizing asset. They help counter some of the volatility in stock markets while also providing a small return in the long run. Treasury bonds, like I-bonds, which is literally a bond, and cash earning 5%, can serve the same kind of function and maybe even serve it a bit better, at least in the current interest rate environment. Now, if and when that changes, we'll rebalance how much of each of those things we hold. And similarly, we also hold gold as an ETF. There's an ETF IAU, which, you know, because it's difficult to hold physical gold and also not very liquid, but there is a fund you can do that. And we hold that because it serves a similar purpose as bonds in evening out equity market volatility, but has the added benefit that gold has also been helping even out the volatility over the last few years in the bond markets, because those markets have also been quite volatile thanks to the interest rate increases. So there's definitely, you know, ways you can switch it up to better serve your own investment style. I think Big Earn also has an article on, you know, using gold to hedge against sequence of return risk, which I'll link to as well as kind of a bonus thing you can read through. But if like all that stable stuff sounded like too much, you know, holding like four different things in your stable assets, it's okay because you can totally ignore it. You don't need to even do that. You can just keep all of your stable allocation in just bonds. And then you can just worry only about rebalancing between your equities, which in our case is invested in VT, and your bonds, which in our case is invested in BNDW. But of course, you can pick any of the other versions of those index funds that better match what you prefer to do. You know, do you believe in the US or do you believe in the world or do you believe in international stocks? And then once a month, you just log into your brokerage account, pull up your Google Sheet, see what it tells you your stock versus bond ratio should be. Buy or sell some VT or buy or sell some BNDW so that it matches that allocation. And then that's all you need to do once a month, literally two trades, and you've optimized your retirement portfolio. I think that's easier than most churns we do, with way bigger results. And the added benefit here is that now each month, you're taking a look at your retirement account. You're taking a little more of an active role in your retirement. Like, at bare minimum now, you're seeing how the markets are performing instead of it being a black box in a target date fund. And knowledge is power. More information means you'll make better decisions about your finances, your spending, your retirement, which I think is a pretty big deal, and it's a good place to be in. However, before you run off to rebalance everything or open up your 401k and figure out what the target date fund you're invested in has been doing over the last decade, I want to share a couple like final thoughts and caveats about the glide path that we've discussed today, because this glide path is more optimal, but to be clear, it's not the most optimal, because the most optimal glide path is going to be unique to every person, because every person has a different risk profile and different retirement goals. What this glide path is that on aggregate, on average, this glide path is going to be more optimal than the alternatives like a target date fund or a fixed stock allocation. Like another way to sort of think about glide paths is that they lessen the impact of bad timing, you know, retiring right before a recession, but they also dampen the upside of great timing, retiring right before like a 10-year expansion. It kind of levels out those two scenarios so that you avoid a get rich or go broke kind of a strategy. It's a more middle ground. And as a result of that, the glide path can underperform a fixed stock allocation in some specific scenarios, like a scenario where the opposite of the sequence of return risk thing happens, where you just get really lucky and you retire at the bottom of a market and it just booms. The stocks just keep going up after you retire. And in that case, if you had just held 100% stock at a retirement, that is better than having a glide path. 100% stock during a market boom, like a decade-long market boom, is going to outperform a glide path that started at 60%. Because more time in the market means more time for your equities to appreciate. But even in that kind of a scenario, early retirement now, he did crunch the data on that, of course, because he crunched the data on everything. And that 60% glide path still beats a fixed allocation ratio of 60% and is almost as good as an 80% fixed allocation. But it is worse than 100% equities in that kind of a market. But this is where the whole risk thing comes in. You know, do you want to risk holding 100% in stocks right when you retire? I mean, maybe. It depends on your risk profile and how much money you have saved and how much you plan to spend. Like, that's why it's sort of impossible to create a single glide path that's optimal for everyone. Like, these target date funds gave it a half-hearted try, you know, but look where that's gotten us with these kinds of glide paths that they made that try to suit everyone. You know, we're all just driving at 65 miles per hour on the freeway. So the risk profile variable is really interesting, you know, and is a big caveat because we all have such different risk profiles. Like these glide paths are calibrated to a quote unquote normal amount of risk aversion. What is a normal amount of risk aversion and how risk adverse are you in relation to that? If you're like, I have no idea how to even think about how risk adverse I am, there's a pretty interesting thought experiment you can do right now, you know, while you're driving, while you're doing the laundry. It's a pretty easy one. And it's the idea of how you would react if presented with a gamble. The gamble being, let's say you have $0 saved for retirement and you're offered a coin toss. If you toss heads, it means that, you know, when you do retire, you'll have $1.5 million. If you toss a tails, when you retire, you'll only have $500,000. So what number would you take to avoid that gamble? What number would you take to walk away from doing a coin toss? Because the expected value of that coin toss is $1 million, right? It's a 50-50 chance you get 1.5 or you get 500,000. So if you're someone who would take $1 million, then you're completely risk neutral. You have no aversion to risk, nor do you seek risk, right? You'll take your $1 million because that's right in the middle, the expected value of that coin toss would be. But if you would only take $1.5 million in order to walk away from that coin toss, what kind of person is that? That's someone who would rather do a coin toss under any scenario unless they could walk away with a guaranteed $1.5 million in retirement. Like they would rather do this coin toss than take $1.4 million guaranteed. that person is on the far end, the extreme end of risk seeking. They want maximum risk. On the flip side of that, what kind of person would take $500,000 to walk away from the gamble? So they would rather not flip the coin at all, and they would rather take the lowest possible value that coin flip would have given them. That person is completely risk adverse. Most of us fall somewhere in the middle, and in fact, most of us are going to be in the risk aversion side of that bet, because this is your retirement we're talking about. This is not a weekend in Vegas at a roulette table. Retirement portfolios are not places where people seek risk. Most of us would take less than $1 million, so less than the expected value, to walk away from the bet. That bet's a pretty harsh bet. And if someone offered you $750,000 to walk away from that bet, most people would probably walk away. That's the normal response. And if you're listening to that and you're like, no, it would take much more for me to walk away from that kind of a bet. That's fine, because these glide paths are calibrated towards someone who would take $750,000. If you're someone who would require $800,000 or $850,000 to walk away from the bet, which is sort of where I think I kind of fall, then you're someone who's less risk adverse than the models gave you credit for. And so you can actually take an even riskier approach than what the glide path is recommending. So if you're like, the glide path is too risky, but I'd only take $900,000 to walk away from the gamble, that would be like saying, I'm scared of walking on the sidewalk because I'm worried about getting hit by a car, but I ride a motorcycle to work. Conversely, if you're invested in target date funds, those funds are calibrated towards someone who would take around $640,000. Just think about that. That's how conservatively calibrated target date funds are. It's pretty crazy to me as someone who would take $850,000, but some people, I mean, I think do fit the bill. You know, they are extremely, extremely risk adverse. But I would just argue that most of you listening today probably don't fall into that category. So when it comes to risk profile, you know, use this thought experiment. Think about where you land so that you can kind of gauge, is this glide path too risky or not risky enough for you? And then go read the damn article, you know, read the article on the glide path, because he goes through different risk profiles on there. I just picked one, the recommended one, to discuss today, but there are other permutations. You can see how those risk profiles would have performed under different market conditions. Finally, because we are talking about stocks and investments, I think it's really important to note that everything we discussed is based on historical data, like a lot of it. However, you've probably heard the adage, past performance is not indicative of future results. And the reason they say that is because that is true. You cannot predict the future using past data. But you can use the historical data as a starting point to sort of gauge your own level of risk and comfort, because the glide path investment strategy, you know, by inputting 150 years of data and making sure that he comes up with an approach that is completely fail-safe, what that means is that the glide path approach would have survived the Great Depression, the dot-com bubble, the 2008 financial crisis, the pandemic, all of those, every single recession we've had in the last 150 years. Could we have a recession in the future that's even worse than those ones? I mean, sure, you know, but is there any strategy that's safe from that? There are also people who fear the stock market completely and keep all of their assets in cash, and that's not safe either. The US financial system itself could collapse. The treasury bonds that you hold could become worthless. Cash is not going to save you in that scenario. You could buy physical gold and bury it in your yard. I mean, you could build a prepper bunker. I mean, what's your level of risk tolerance based on what you think might happen in the future? And for me, I'm comfortable gambling that the US financial system, the banks, the stock market, those will be around until I die. That said, I did just watch Civil War, the movie, last night in theaters. So I'm like, you know, 5% less comfortable in that statement now than I was yesterday. But I'm still going with the US will be around thing, because if I don't believe in that, I think I've got bigger things to worry about than investment strategy and churning. I need to be out there like buying guns and stocking up on dehydrated food and digging my bunker. But I'm not doing that, and I am gambling that stocks will do what they have done since the inception of the stock market, that they'll cycle up and they'll cycle down, but overall, they will rise. And I'm gambling that if this glide path strategy can survive every single recession we've had to date, it can probably survive the next few recessions that will come around before I die. All right, everyone, that's it for this episode. Hopefully you've made it this far. I know this was a big one today. Pretty big topic to cover. I'm going to link all of the articles that I mentioned earlier. I think mandatory reading, definitely. Because at the end of the day, I'm not a financial advisor, just summarizing the research of someone much smarter than me. So it's important that you go in and read and review the data for yourself. And you decide, because this is one of the most important things you'll do for yourself financially in your life. Like, other than, you know, getting married and having a kid, I think planning for retirement is probably the next on that list. And so it is worth a weekend of your time. So set aside the time, check it out, read the stuff. If you have any questions, definitely feel free to leave a comment on the website. I always try to respond to those, or drop by the private Discord. We have a fire channel and an investments channel. I'm pretty active in both of those. There's also a free newsletter, as well as a live churn tracker, all kinds of stuff, all at thedailychurnpodcast.com. So definitely check it out. Otherwise, I will catch you all next time for the April monthly recap. Thanks again for tuning in. See ya.